States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Carabelle in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
PA Bread, I think we've built a brand at this point.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Carabelle in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none. The best Breeders' Awards and Stallion Awards in the country.
Racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
An app created specifically for horse racing. Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts breeding program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and we've got Dave Hill for at least 20 minutes to get you rolling into the NCAAs. And having just been in Vegas, Dave, I realize I've also got to congratulate you. I think I told the audience, but you know, here you are too on your poker on the magazine award. That was fabulous.
Yeah, it was unexpected. I was happy to. That was a pleasant surprise winning that. Thanks a lot.
Well. We are looking forward to the NCAAs. These 4 days are always just frenetic and fabulous, and much like the football season, unabated with some tools to approach it. And what's your overall thoughts going into tomorrow?
Well, I just had a Calcutta auction the night before last, which I was pretty pleased with how it turned out. I did a Calcutta last year. I think I talked to you guys about that one. Yep. And I ended up scooping it and got really lucky in it, but still feel like I did, you know, due diligence and make my picks there. I also entered your bracket pool and won that as well. So I just want to tip my hat to Unabated and Pool Genius, because I use those tools for both of those things. So, you know, the proof is in the pudding here, folks. And if you use my code HILL, you'll get Pool Genius for free if you sign up for Unabated. And this is all the stuff that I use to pick this stuff. I mean, it's a little different than betting on football or betting on basketball, really. It's a little bit different than gambling. This is more like playing a game.
Well, let's play.
Well, I think there's two ways to think about March Madness. One is most of your listeners probably make brackets, you know, do bracket challenges with their office mates or their coworkers, or maybe their family does a bracket, or maybe you're going to enter one of these big bracket challenges, you know, with a million people in it. And filling out a bracket is different than just picking the games against the spread or trying to handicap the games. You know, picking a bracket is trying to win the pool. And that means knowing when to go contrarian, when not to go contrarian, how to differentiate your bracket from the others in the contest, understanding the point system and the rules for your bracket challenge. So I think that's one thing that folks we could talk about that might be interesting to folks. And the other thing is picking the winners of, you know, round by round in these games and how to handicap these tournament games. You know, a Calcutta auction is a little bit of a mixture of both. It's kind of its own game in that you want to assign value to a team, but that value is going to change. It's very dynamic. It changes as the auction goes and you get a better sense of what the total pool is going to be. And it's a little bit more like poker because you use some psychology to push up the values of teams that you don't want, and to manipulate the size of the pool. So those are kind of the three different ways I think you can approach playing March Madness.
And I mean, in terms of value, for any number of states that, you know, players are going to have the opportunity to, you know, bet teams on the money line. They're going to have opportunity to take points, over unders. I mean, what's the best approach if somebody wants to bet individual games, first of all?
Well, I think in handicapping the games, you know, you're going to want to approach handicapping the tournament games the same way you would probably any other college basketball games. The only difference is that throughout the NCAA men's and women's season, there's always big injury concerns. And basketball is a sport where injuries make a major difference, because basketball is all handicapped by minutes and matchups. And so one injury can really change a handicap dramatically in a way that it probably doesn't in, say, the NFL. In the tournament, you know, going into the tournament, what the lineup is. It's a shorter set of games, and it's unlikely, you know, you'll know if there's an injury in any given round. But going into this, you know, people are rested and ready to play, right? A good example is Houston. You know, Juwan Roberts is the star of this team. He got hurt in the championship game of the conference tournament. They say he's going to play. How hurt is he? We don't know. So that's one interesting, you know, injury issue that you might want to pay attention to. But generally in the tournament, these are teams at full strength. So when you look back at their historical, you know, how they've done over the course of this season, it's important to remember that a lot of those games that they played over the course of the season, they didn't necessarily have their full lineup. They were playing in very lopsided competition sometimes. I think some people tend to look at a team's record and think, wow, this team had a great record, they must be a solid team, without looking at, you know, were they cupcake teams that they were playing? You know, were they playing teams that were injured and banged up at the time that they beat them? You know, all that stuff has to go into your handicap, because unlike the NFL, you have a lot more of a sample size.
Strength of schedule, you know, some of the tools from an unabated perspective. You know, we got the KenPom and all, you know, all of that. You know, the group wins.
Yeah, there's a lot of available data and a lot of different people doing a lot of analysis on college basketball, maybe more so than any other sport in the United States. So, you know, you're spoiled for choice in what you want to turn to for data. I use Pool Genius. I think they do a really good job, and I think I like them because I feel like you have to pay for it. So it's information that's not widely available the way that, say, KenPom or something else is, that, you know, kind of everybody knows about now. And so you're going to want to differentiate yourself from the pack, whether you're handicapping the game or whether you're playing a bracket pool.
Are there some individual teams that you think are, you know, being essentially undervalued going into the next few days?
Definitely. And undervalued can mean, you know, different things, different pools, right? So if you're playing in a small pool with your office mates, what's being undervalued nationally on ESPN bracket challenges may not matter in your pool. So one thing your listeners may want to look at is, if you live in Kentucky, and you're playing in a local bracket, you know, that Kentucky might be overvalued, right? Or, you know, that there's going to be some differentiations here. If you're playing in a small pool, you know, it may not matter to try to go contrarian. But yeah, I think that if you look, you know, we have the benefit of being able to look at what the public is picking in their brackets at places like ESPN and Yahoo and whatnot. And there's really interesting splits between where the public is picking and what the market betting data is showing the probability should be. And so one of the things you want to do is look and find the biggest splits there to find good contrarian picks. Just generally speaking, I mean, I like St. Mary's. I bought them in the Calcutta. I actually bought in my Calcutta a lot of the West bracket. And the main reason why I put a lot of value on the teams in the West bracket is because North Carolina is the most vulnerable one seed. And so that just sort of creates a lot of value on the whole bracket there. I think Arizona is an interesting two seed, but I think everybody thinks that. In fact, in my Calcutta auction, I didn't get them. I got outbid for them because there was a lot of interest in them, but I was able to snatch some of the lower seeded teams in the West for a pretty good deal because they got a little bit ignored since Arizona, you know, sucked up all the air in the room. But St. Mary's, Michigan State is another good one that I think could go deep in the tournament, and New Mexico.
It's funny. I don't even have to look at the path to know that Tom Izzo will overperform with the Spartans. And Purdue typically will underperform. I guess it's time. Yeah. It's time for my annual Gene Cady joke.
Well, you know, Purdue's got, you know, they went out in the first round last year, so they've got a chip on their shoulder. They'll probably get out of the first round this year, but they're also a bit of a vulnerable one seed. I also like Gonzaga here, and I like Texas Tech is another team that I think is an interesting mid-seeded team that could make a run.
How much conference strength do you weigh in?
I don't put a lot of stock into just raw record. I think that one of the things I've learned from these guys at Pool Genius, and one of the things that they do is they really drill down into some granular data. I mean, they go back and look at every game through the season for all of these teams. I mean, they really do their homework. And so they try to put some context to those conference records and to those overall records. And if you, you know, look at Pool Genius, you'll see that they'll talk about a team and how much its record is inflated by, you know, easy wins versus, you know, tough wins. Narrow losses is another thing to look at, where a team might have fought really hard and lost a buzzer beater in what was essentially a toss-up game that could have put them at a much higher seed. There's a number of teams like that that could have been a top three seeded team if a couple of tough games went the other way, that maybe the committee just looked at the overall results of the game and not how close it was. So this is where I think, you know, you can benefit from other people's hard work and homework that they've done here, rather than having to go back and watch all these games yourself.
Dave Hill with us and talking about the tourney. It starts tomorrow. Rich Engel join us tomorrow, and not only will we recap NHC with Rich, but Rich had a fabulous NCAA tournament last year. Dave, what about the matchups? The seeding matchups that get a tremendous amount of attention and on a regular basis, the way in which, you know, the NCAA bracket builders, they've got a fairly uncanny way of creating these matchups, the 5-12s, the 7-10s, the 8-9s in particular.
Yeah, well, the seeding is a little goofy, right? Because it's subjective. You know, teams are seeded based on a committee that makes that determination. And so I think it's worth your while to ignore the seeding completely when you're looking at either picking a bracket or handicapping these games, and look at the market data. I mean, right now, if you look at the futures market, Auburn is more likely, according to the betting markets, to win the championship than North Carolina. And Auburn is what, a four seed?
Yeah.
So, you know, let's trust the betting markets here and not, you know, the subjective whims of the the committee that pick that chooses the seeding here. But what ends up happening is because of the seeding and the way that the brackets get structured is that some teams have an easier path than others. And the path matters a lot too, but all of that information gets baked into the market prices. And so you'll have an advantage when you're doing your bracket. If you look at the, if you look at market data and compare that to public, what the public's picking versus just thinking about the seeds or even the raw records and comparing one team to another.
What's your feeling toward, some of the big, some of the biggest names? You had a very unusual conference championship scenario over the weekend that I was had sort of one eye on things. We were pretty immersed in the NHC, but couldn't help but be sort of astounded at three of the four ones getting beat. How much stock do we put in that? I mean what Iowa State did to Houston, are these teams limping in, or are those anomalies?
They may be limping in, yeah. I mean, it is tough to have to win your, to win a tournament and then come back and win another tournament. But, that's not unusual this year. That's how it is every year, and yet the chalk still seems to do well, right? Just remember that those one seeds that might have looked vulnerable playing the best competition in their conference this week are going to start this tournament out playing 16 seeds. So, they're going to get,
yeah,
the one seeds are going to get the easiest walk to the Final Four.
Other than what we've mentioned so far, Texas Tech, Gonzaga, New Mexico, Michigan State.
I think Connecticut's going to win the tournament. I think that I bought them in the Calcutta. I spent a ton of money to get them, but, I think that they win this, you play this tournament, over and over, they win it one out of every, four or five times, I think. So they're tremendous favorites here, even though they're only about 20% to win, which is in this case a pretty big, 20% is a big favorite. So I like Connecticut. I think that you'd be a fool not to put Connecticut in your championship game, not winning the whole thing, depending on, who's in your bracket pool with you.
I have got plenty of adjustment to make, because I like I said, I having been at NHC, I did not, I haven't done any work. What do you make of Marquette?
Well, you're on New Orleans time now, and so things move a little slower down there.
Yeah, well,
get to it when you get to it.
Well, exactly. I don't have too much time. We got just about 24 hours, 25 hours. What about my Raiders? Colgate back for a fifth straight year, and I took them. I played a couple of different things before I left Vegas. Got to play Baylor.
I tried to buy Colgate in my auction and couldn't get them. But Colgate's. And Creighton, I think Creighton's a team that you always are interested in, aren't they?
I do. I love the Blue Jays. Yeah.
Yeah. I tried to grab Creighton. They ended up, I think, going a little bit overpriced. But I grabbed Connecticut, so I'm going to try to ride that sucker to another win, hopefully this year. And if you do another bracket pool, I'll gladly enter it and try to let Unabated and Pool Genius carry me to the finish there too.
I love it. Dave Hill, everybody, getting us started, and we'll check in next week for the Sweet 16. And Dave, good luck. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Thanks, everybody. Lizzie Bontome Relay.
Exactly. Dave Hill. That was good. That gave us, gave you a couple of names, and we'll add, we'll augment this with Rich Eng, because Rich, right? Rich last year went some crazy, what was he, like 11-2? Or some nutty, just an unbelievable effort. Rich is a terrific sports bettor. So those will be our guides again this year when it comes to the NCAAs. Kevin Kilroy is going to join us for a couple of minutes in a couple of minutes, and I think we're going to get a little introduction and just get kind of an overview and we'll get more serious with KK on Friday. Same thing with Caitlin Free, and because we couldn't, yeah, we missed Caitlin last, didn't we? Did we miss Caitlin last week? I think we did. But I know that she's got to be getting excited for Saturday. And if you didn't see it, I retweeted it last night or this morning. But Travis is going to go up and be part of the broadcast on Saturday. So you'll get a little bit of Travis ahead of the Churchill meet. And Travis has got a terrific opinion. Don't reach out enough, honestly, to Travis. Speaking of the two cards, no sooner did I bring up here's Joe McKay saying that everybody's picking New Mexico, but that a New Mexico coach said that they're not that good. go whichever way you want. I will tell you that one funny thing that happened, if you were listening to the NHC coverage, the Horseshoe Vegas was teeming with fans and with cheerleaders. I don't know where the teams were playing, but I can tell you that all the cheerleading squads, you'd go to the elevators, to the bank of elevators, and you know, you'd hear a ding, and you go to stand, wait for the elevator doors to open, and out would pour literally two dozen cheerleaders for all these Western. I'm pretty sure it was the Mountain West, right? Is that where the Lobos, do they play? Is that whatever it was? I saw Nevada. I saw we learned about the existence of UTA, University of Texas at Arlington, which I honestly was not aware. But it was just funny. I mean, you'd go through the lobby at certain points in the day, and there were, you know, there were all these cheer groups. I managed to steer myself off the clip. Caitlin actually is got to beg off for today, so we'll save her for Friday and her opinions. But here's the decisions. I mentioned that I had not heard, for instance, Marcus with the decisions about the cross entries. And first, he came with Agate Road is running here. And Triple Espresso, despite the draw, is running at Turfway. All right? So make that... right? Because Triple Espresso, I think...
Yeah.
Wasn't he... Right? Wasn't he well wide drawn?
Yeah, he was... Is yeah. The AE in there?
Do you want to use the stick? Do you mind the stick, or do you want the headset?
No. That's great.
All right. And no sooner do I bring it up... KK slides in. Kevin Kilroy, good morning.
Good morning, good morning, Steve. Great to have you here. Welcome to New Orleans.
Well, I managed, even though I don't drink, I managed to completely botch. That's the second time in a year, essentially, because I did the same thing in Nashville, where, you know, I'm looking, it's 7:45. All right, I'm on my way to the track, and Casey says, where are you? Are you hooked up? I said, no. So I'm not there yet. He says, it's 9 o'clock. I'm like, what? Oh, no.
Did you get some beignets on the way to the track? What'd
no,
you do?
I was having breakfast. I was over a toast. Having a fin herb omelet with Gruyere and with those Lyonnaise potatoes.
You know, you get a day like that. Going from Vegas to New Orleans, you get a little mess up.
I can't complain about I got off to a great start here last night.
Did you go out? Got
went, to, went to College Inn, which was one of my favorites.
Yep.
After Bright's, we're going to be at Frank's on Friday. We got to get opinions from Frank as well, from Frank Bryson. And but then, you know, if you're on Carrollton, if you're on that side of Carrollton, going to go over to Bricado's for Spumoni. They've got a Spumoni slice that literally, I've written about this. Growing up in the Northeast, Spumoni was you know, at every birthday party and
oh,
every,
really?
Oh my God, you'd get either a little brick of Spumoni or a cup of Spumoni, and it a lot of people are going to be like, ugh, Spumoni, it's so commercial or whatever, and it, there is a cloying quality to the flavor profile,
yeah,
with the pistachio, yeah, and the cherry and the lemon and the almond, but it just doesn't, it really exist anymore. And so when you come here, Bracato's Spumoni is such a throwback, and all
all their cookies there. You know, I didn't know about that spot until I think it was you were here 2 years ago, and then you had posted about it or talking about it, and I was like, oh, I took my kids there, and just went to town. You know, it's got a box full of cookies, got the gelato, and just it's a neat spot. And I didn't realize the original location. I think the original, at least, they used to be at that Croissant d'Or in the quarter. Have you ever been there before?
I have not, actually. I only go to Mid City.
You'll still see the it's not there now. It's a different spot, right? But you'll still see the like the tile floor.
I love
that.
Says
Bracato's.
Yeah. 1905.
1905. Is that right?
1905, and they've also opened in the new airport, which is amazing. And
so it is a good call, right?
On your way out of town. I mean, when I go to the location in Mid City, I always get the Spumoni. Tina will get gelato when she's here, usually salted caramel. They don't have the Spumoni slices at the airport.
Oh no.
They've only got like 8 gelato flavors, and so there I get the stracciatelle, which is basically chocolate chip, you know, vanilla with little shards of chocolate.
They make you work for it. They make you come.
You
got to do what you got to do.
I'm like a freak with it. But they've got, I mean, it's funny because I'm not as big a pastry guy, but they've got every imaginable old-fashioned Italian pastry that exists, and then they've got some fun flavors of you know, cheesecakes, and they got a Spumoni cheesecake slice. You name it. It is. Last night it was Tuesday night. Literally, I mean, I had to wait about 15 minutes in a line of about 8. I then sat down to have the Spumoni, and I kid you not, as I left, there must have been, the line was probably 20 deep, wrapping through the room.
And it wasn't like a beautiful spring night. It was a little chilly, you know.
It was nice enough.
It wasn't like brought everybody out of the house.
No,
I think they got a beard nomination, but they didn't win last year.
Good for them.
So that's good that they're getting recognized.
Well, Mid-City, you know, everybody runs to the French Quarter, which is, I understand. I understand all that. But Mid-City, to me, really, Carrollton from one end of Carrollton to the other, is really the hidden, the sort of unappreciated culinary tract.
I got a spot for you. I haven't gone there yet, but I just went by it last night, and it looks charming. It's new, Love and Honey, Jewish soul food.
Oh wow!
Mixed with Middle Eastern
stuff.
Young entrepreneur, you know, setting it up, and she seems to be real passionate about it, and it's just right riverside of Norman Francis, so just, you know, the bayou cuts into there, right? And it's just a block in from that intersection right there. Yellow storefront.
Wow.
8 to 3, you gotta go check it out.
8 to 3, so it's a lunch.
I can't give the full recommendation, but it looks charming. It looks like they're doing it right. It looks like a good spot. A little breakfast lunch.
Every suggestion is the problem with coming here, and I'm only here this year, I'm only going to get, whatever, the 4.5 days. But, that was it last year that we had this ridiculous, you know, troika of trips where there was Risen Star, there was HBPA convention, and then Tina decided she wanted to come here for her Easter break. So
that's right. You were back
here.
That
was about three times. It was nuts.
Yeah.
And, so we don't have that luxury. So you end up, you know, there's the certain set of
you got to make your choices.
The places you just absolutely. But college, The College Inn came to us very accidentally because we were I don't even remember who we were with, but we met them at Rock and Bowl.
Yeah.
And then we were getting hungry. It was Valentine's night, actually. And we were getting hungry, and we had met the owner at Rock and Bowl. I'm going to forget his name. And he said, well, you should just – he owns the restaurant. He owns College Inn. So he said, come over to College Inn, ask for – he told me the hostess's name.
And it's unassuming. You wouldn't be like, of course I'll go there. You might look past it.
It's been here since 1933, and if you want to go someplace in this town – where all the locals eat and where there's no tourists, it's the College Inn,
yeah.
Ye Olde College Inn, and the place is fabulous. And apparently last night, Tuesday night, there were all these office groups that come every Tuesday night, and Mike, the behind the bar, famous for his old fashions, I'd never miss it. I mean, if you want to just go have a bowl of gumbo, or if you want to have a sandwich, then there's full entrees. They're sort of a farm to table kind of a treatment,
yeah,
menu wise, and it absolutely fabulous. So that's my, and very frequently the night after racing, you know, I have gone a couple of different times.
That Saturday night?
Yeah, both after Risen and I think actually after Louisiana Derby 2 years ago. This is the second time I've come for Derby as opposed to Risen Star.
So what about tonight? Crawfish boil at Grant's?
Ooh.
Yeah, it's on.
Really?
Yep, 4:30.
I think he's mad because I did not get the – and Bill Landis says Tortoni, and good for you, Bill, because I'd love Tortoni.
I don't know that spot. I can write that
down. Absolutely. I'd love Tortoni. I missed the Risen Star, which ended up being a shrimp boil because it was a bad start to the crawfish season.
Right. So it's going to be crawfish tonight. I think shrimp as well. 4:30.
At the barn.
Grant Forrester.
All right. I'm sure he's mad at me.
Might be a reason to celebrate, too. He's got a good horse in today. Ambivalent. So.
Ooh. Look at you.
Yeah.
You want to, actually, what do you got today before we talk about Saturday?
Yeah, it could get a little bit chalky in the first few races. Got a Calhoun horse in that first one. Lawless Times, it does seem like the one to get it done. You know, got these lob red races, and you got these trainers that aren't going to be sticking around Louisiana. Might as well sort of drop them down and get the win, right? So going from maiden special weight to maiden claimers. Gary Shearer, he's three away from 500.
Nice.
Three away from 500. He's having a great meet. He's got 12 wins on the meet.
It's the winter of G. The winter of G.
What else?
Well, he a few winters ago, he said, whenever I win, say it's the winter of G.
He's great. I've gotten to know him from talking to him, you know, and getting ready for hopefully he hits it here with us. And he's got a few in there. He's got Muyan, who does seem like, you know, will be a short price, but most likely winner there. And I think ran really well last time, didn't get the win there. So race two, number four, Muyan. Seems like he's taking another shot with this new addition, On Your Mark, in race three. Mitchell Merle's going to get up on that one, and maybe we'll just be out of the gates a little bit quicker and into the race. It is a tough race there, but I think Gary should definitely get one or maybe two today. He does have Velociter in the New Orleans Classic, that runner that stepped up in a big way for him. So he seems to be moving well, and he was targeting this race, and he's going after it.
Velociter is going to get a fabulous trip in there.
I mean,
right behind the speed. Do we have the line's out, isn't it?
I don't think it is published, but I've got it somewhere.
Hold on. It might. What's today? Today's the 20th, so what are we looking at? No, it's not up just yet.
I can pull it up just so we have it while we're talking. Mikey D.
Because I am curious.
Gives us the, the handwritten one before it all gets published. But it is going to take me a second here. So then, Ambivalent, Grant's horse, I think he ran a great race last time and didn't get the win there, finished second. But I do think that definitely deserves a shot there. Another short price. But what about Curly Jack shortening up? You know, that Derby horse from Amos's barn who came and you know, couldn't quite get it done on the Derby Trail there. They're going long, going on the dirt, and they tried the turf last time, and, you know, it didn't go great, but they're shortening up. It's a great angle for Amos, and talk about a barn that's been hot and been hot with prices. You know, a lot of times you'll see Tom's barn get it done, being placed appropriately, and, you know, and get those wins, but you've seen some 17-1s, some 26-1s come home for Tom, so you might be able to get some value on Curly Jack there in race three. I might be struggling
10-1
to find this. Yeah,
10-1 to one on there. Curly Jack. Ambivalent, yeah. 5-2. So we're looking at a 3-7 exacta box.
Then you've got Olivia G. I mean, 2-1 on the morning line. Patricia West, Philly, who's just shortening up. No, what's she doing?
Mile.
She's stretching out. That's right. I knew she was changing distances. Right. She's just one of those, you know, one of those fillies who was just getting second again and again and again, but against stakes company, you know, and she found her friends last time and was able to take on Sister Ella, a nice Asmussen filly who's going to be in that Crescent City Oaks on Saturday and run them all down there going 6 furlongs. So Angel Suarez up on that one. I think you can lean on Olivia G there, but a lot of short prices. And we've got Wesley Ward's bringing us one here in race five. Does seem like, you know, another one that should be good to go off a big layoff. I'm about to go from that outside spot.
It's the 9.
Yeah, but intermittent fast on the 1 in here from Mike Maker, getting on the turf for the first time. I do think that, you know, Maker's been having a really good barn. It's a new addition to his barn. I always like that angle for Maker, you know, getting on the turf and bringing a new one in. 3-year-old could be interesting in there. Reagan's Flame, Sheree DeVoe, I think. You know, watching the DeVoe barn work this past week, I think we're going to see some good performances. I think they're going to close out really strong. And Reagan's Flame has definitely shown some talent. Flameaways have been doing good. I've been impressed with them. So shortening up on that one, and that could be the key.
It's a good race. You got Tipsy Runner in there too for Amos. This is a good group.
That's a good group, right? I think they could go a lot of different directions in there. You might be able to find some value there where you're maybe leaning on some chalk on the other ones. And a little bit of a price for you in race six. 6 furlong, claiming 30. Number 7, Sir Liam. Scott Gellner's runner. Corey Lannery up on this one. Recently gelded. And just one of those moves where watching Sir Liam, just hard to control, rank often, showing some talent, showing some speed, but just hasn't been able to really relax out there. So I do think that, you know, we're getting on the dirt and recently gelded, and Corey's staying up on that. I think that's always a good sign. So 12-1 on Sir Liam, but does have Corey Mann in there. Brad Cox is, 3-year-old who stakes company at Turfway. You know, that's, I think that's a good sign that, you know, confidence was there. Good recent work there on the 16th. Watch Quarryman go solo and did look good. So, but, you know, the money's going to pour in on that runner in there. Then we've got this other interesting turf route, 3-year-olds. Night out for Stidham. I think maybe we can give another shot to first-time starter Magical Road, 1.1 mil. On this quality road colt out of Magical World. You know, works look fine. I haven't seen him with my eye, so I can't really get behind that one. Magical Road, I see 8-1 from Mikey D, which is always, I think, a good sort of signal as well, because, you know, he's clocking, he's watching them all. But Just a Freak, Eddie Keneally's blinkers on, Justify Colt. Makes sense we're getting to the turf here. We've seen some talent. Definitely have seen some really good works from Just a Freak in the morning. You know, Triple Crown nominated, the ambitions have been there, the talent's been there, you know, ran in that famous race at Nash Run where we all, you know, fell in love with Nash and thinking that he was going to be amazing and, you know, got second there, just sort of picking off the pieces. But I do think Just a Freak might be one that could offer a little bit of a value, though. Eddie's horses do get bet pretty well when they're live. And then Sugar Hook, another good one from Tom Amos. He's getting it done on the turf.
What about these two Whit Beckman runners, Noble Eagle and Might As Well, both 8-1?
Both 8-1, I know.
Second-timers.
I think I would lean on the first-time starter in here, Might As Well. Sorry, second time out for Might As Well, too, right?
Yeah.
On that same race there, and that second one. Seeing Jareth up on this one. Yeah, you know, the jockey game, I actually can't figure that out. I'm not going to even try to get behind that. Seeing Torres on up, and he's on that one. But I know he's been working a lot of horses for Beckman was up on drip. So I do think Jareth is something maybe to sort of parse him out there. But Torres has been riding fantastic. I don't know. I mean, I think we can get real excited about Beckman's barn, and I do think he's got a few good ones in there. Agu has been stepping forward in a big way. Obviously, Anna Marie and Drip was amazing in that race. So I don't know. They might be the good here in the second one. But I've got no good feel for them.
All right, I just was curious because the barn, the barn has been, I mean, pretty focused. Beckman, he's not going away.
No, I like Witt. I've got a chance to talk to him a few times, and he does seem obviously a great horseman, and just just a good conversation too. He's got a lot of great things to say about horsemanship, which I always appreciate.
Well, that's some of the action here as the week gets started. It's closing week, and five more race cards here at Fairgrounds, highlighted by Saturday's Louisiana Derby card. Kevin Kilroy with us. Trust your luck, and let's talk a little bit. I mean, I'm not going to press you for final selections because it's you got another 48 hours to figure out what you're doing. But
yeah,
let's get some overview from you from 500 feet above.
Yeah, Louisiana Derby.
Yeah,
those 12 runners in there. The pace could heat up. We've got interesting draws in here. We've got interesting, two runners coming out for Steve Asmussen. And like you're talking about, it looks like Triple Espresso is going to be up at Turfway Park or is there currently. So it'd be weird to come on down back. But we've got Hall of Fame and Antiquarian. So you've got sort of the other entries from both those barns drawn right next to each other. Both have natural speed to them. Hall of Fame, didn't send last time, and that was going to be one of the questions where we're going to see Steve's, track Phantom in the Hall of Fame just sort of go to the front and just sort of try to control things. What were they going to do? Hall of Fame was in good position, in terms of coming around the turn and just fall flat, down the stretch. But has Antiquarian to his outside and might have his sort of, his hand pushed where he's either got to send and try to beat that one so Antiquarian doesn't try to, really set the controlling, commanding speed with Johnny V up. You've got to be worried about that, right? So that could be interesting to see how they sort of go up against each other, and that could dictate a lot of stuff, sort of the strategy before, they even get in the gates with what they're going to do there. I do think that no matter what they do, Track Phantom is just a true commanding speed horse. And, I'm trying to knock him because seeing his figures, looking at Thoroughgraph, seeing like a little dip back, right? A little 6, 7, 8, 9, going in the wrong direction. But he went slow last time. The figures are just not going to come back fast, right? He had that commanding speed. He had that that easy going, and he got ran down by Sierra Leone. But in the last gaps there, he did come back on him, right? It wasn't like he got passed and he was like,
He
didn't pack it in. He came back on him. So I think that is a game horse. And I think I'm going to trust him, Steve. I know it's going to be a short price, but I do think with that outside post, he knows it well. He's been drawn outside in his last three. And I think he's going to have some people flying at him late, but I think we've seen him really handle sharp pace as well. We've seen him be, very nifty and push button when needed be, when being bore down by Nash and a few others there coming out of the turn, just really being able to open up at just a little, responding very quickly to Rosario. So maybe we'll get some, a little bit more value than we think on him as we kind of look at the figures and just haven't seen him really take that big step forward. Now, that being said, if the plans are to cook it up and have Antiquarian just be an all-out send and really test him, it could set up well for Agate Road, who took a nice step forward there with his second time on the dirt, but really first time as a maturing horse. And you got to think Irad's going to be able to just trip out from there, right? Assuming that those two go forward to his inside, he gets to the rail and kind of has it his own way and is able to get off there and run at him. Catching Freedom, he hasn't always looked amazing, but he's shown his heart to me. He's always there at the end. This last two races, the Smarty Jones was a good win. I thought he ran great for third there in the Risen Star. Still green, talking to Brad. He's seeing him move forward in the mornings, but still lightly racing green and just sort of figuring out how to get his feet underneath him out there, and maybe switch leads back or didn't switch leads. I don't have my note in front of me on that at the end, but I think he's somebody who you should trust in your to be able to run another honest race. Anne-Marie should move forward off of that last race. Definitely needed one off that long layoff. The pace was compromised. That closer, Ben Curtis is up. And that's an interesting story. You know, if he's able to get to the Derby from, you know, Irish born, won 1,000 in England, you know, one of the top riders over there, won a lot of races, you know, in South Korea, Australia, Saudi, and having a really strong meet here. And he's up on this one. And if he can, you know, if he can beat Frankie to the Derby, right, as these Euro riders are coming over, that would be cool to see because he's a great guy. We've loved having him here at Fairgrounds. I think Next Level will run better. I don't think he's got a shot to win, but I think he'll run better. And Common Defense, I was impressed with that Rebel run. He did have, you know, saved every inch on the rail. Brian just gave him a great trip. But he just showed me a little bit more of a putting himself into the race early, where, you know, looking at the smart or in the Southwest, he maybe it was the track, maybe it was the slot, but he didn't seem to really be aggressive and sort of like really put his best foot forward in terms of finding good position and being a little bit more showing off his natural speed. So he could be right behind whoever's, you know, in front and get that first run on him. And he looked great in the morning the other day, just a really nice surge. He's just been sort of doing it all himself with no nudging from the rider whatsoever. So he's working forwardly. Obviously, McPeak's been having tons of success with these three-year-olds. So Common Defense is one that I'm interested in as well. But, Track Phantom does seem – I think he likes it when they go fast. I think he'll respond well if it does heat up.
What one horse you haven't mentioned, actually, Tuscan Gold. Here's Chad coming back to I don't want to call it the scene of the crime,
yep.
But Sierra Leone pointing for the bluegrass, and Chad assigns Tuscan Gold the opportunity here, and the Medaglia d'Oro recent maiden breaker at Gulfstream at the end of January out of the very nice Valadorna. I want to say Cassie, but I'm not 100% sure. The Curlin Mare, Stone Street bred. With another step forward, Tuscan Gold is okay in here.
Yeah, he looked amazing visually, you know, at Gulfstream when he broke his maiden. You saw him just really just navigate through traffic in the turn and make a big move. And you're like, wow, this is a really handy horse who has got a big late kick and he should like our long stretch, right? But just I'm just not sure who he was running through. You know, it kind of felt like, you know, seeing – Emma Smith run through a high school, defensive line. You know, it just wasn't. I'm not sure who he was running. And he ran down that wire to wire, skipped the line. Who just, you know, hasn't really shown me too much. You know, it's still lightly raced, but the figures haven't been huge. So, a 10 and a 10 on Thoroughgraph from Tuscan Gold. You know, I think he should move forward off that, but will it be enough? And he's got to work out a trip from that outside spot. But Tyler obviously did such a great job with Sierra Leone last time, and as he always does, Tyler, you know.
Well,
he's fantastic.
Here's the line that was released with the draw, and Hall of Fame, 8-1. Feels like that'll come down. Antiquarian, 12-1. Agate Road, 8-1. Catching Freedom, 4-1, which feels aggressive. 30-1 on Awesome Ruta, the Joe Foster with Mitch Merle. Honor Marie, 8-1. Next Level, 30-1 for from Keith DeSormo. Real Men Violin, 20-1. Common Defense, 6-1, which is lower than I think a lot of us would. I would have hoped we could have gotten a little bit better of a price on Common Defense. And then Tuscan Gold, 8-1. And Track Phantom, 3-1. So there's your, and of course with Triple Espresso, who was 20-1 coming out. So those numbers will move around more than a little bit. But you still have an 11 horse field that has got a ton of intrigue. And it's tough to envision anything less than an honest pace. I mean, there's, you know, between Track Phantom having to, you know, got the whole stretch this time though to find position, and then Hall of Fame and Antiquarian inside. Then after that, I mean, I suppose Tuscan Gold will go forward just to get position. I don't think it needs to be on the lead, but, you know, could tuck right behind and stalk Track Phantom. Everybody else is pretty much, you know, off the pace or just off. And that includes, you know, some fairly deep closers. Common Defense is going to come from off. Real Men Violin, mid-pack or further back. Same for Next Level. Honor Marie comes from off. Catching Freedom comes from, you know, about two-thirds of the field back as well. Agate Road, probably fifth or sixth midfield, right?
Yeah, I think she could be in a perfect spot. You know, I think Common Defense is going to be up closer to it. I think seeing his sort of second move, you know, at the gate, he's sort of gotten, you know, in a good spot. But see him really just move up behind those front runners last out there. I think he's just showing that he's just got his mind, you know, in the race in a whole different sort of ambitious way. And I'm guessing that Tyler follows Brian, you know, that he just sort of tries to get behind Common Defense or keeps, you know, tracking that one and then just follows him, makes his move behind him. And if he can outgame him late, you know, that's sort of how I'm seeing those two lining up. But I think Common Defense might be a little bit closer than we've seen early on in the last few.
Agate Road, what did we see on Agate Road? 8-1?
Yeah, I don't think so, right?
Well, that's the beauty, that this is why we want full fields.
Yeah.
For just this reason, because there's going to be two horses at the least that are not overlooked, but just by the force of, you know, the market. Price dynamics.
Yeah, you'll see 12-1 on horses that you're like, whoa. You know,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, what?
It could be Common Defense, you know. Maybe. I don't think it'll be Agate Road. Irad takes money, you know, wherever he is.
Agate Road, sitting with, you talk about Thurgraph, they ran a 5 in the, yeah, in the Sam Davis.
Yeah.
And No More Time certainly didn't disgrace himself in the Tampa Bay Derby 2 weeks ago. Agate Road feels like he comes down a little bit. I thought Common Defense would have been in the 8-1 range. So maybe he comes up. I mean, it could be Chad that ends up being the overlay. And I got to tell you, if Antiquarian is 12-1, anything close to that, he probably is the right value.
Yeah, I mean, he beat Cornishman last out, right? That really nice Brad Cox,
who finally came through with all Antiquarian has done is dealt with the Conquest Warrior.
Yep,
the Shug, you know, potential beast that is heading to the Florida Derby,
yep.
And you know, even in his maiden breaker, not only did he beat Cornishman, but that El Magnifico, that was an Asmussen at the races lock of the week, which was beaten by Antiquarian.
That was good value. We're off in there 7-1. Yeah, it ran great. El Magnifico, Just a Freak there. Funny Flame, Sweet Talking Bourbon.
Yep.
You know, Django was in there. That was a nice field.
El Magnifico was behind Cornishman in Cornishman's maiden breaker.
Gunpilot.
Gunpilot. Thank you. There you go. All right.
Gunpilot. And that was a nice finish. Yeah.
This is a really fun. I'm pleased that I ended up missing Risen Star, and I'm here for this. This will be terrific. Kevin Kilroy and company for your action today, tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Then what? You'll be up at Churchill for Derby.
Yeah, I'll be up to Churchill. You'll see a good amount of me up at Churchill.
Do some Twin Spires.
I'll leave it at that.
Note teams, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And, we will talk Friday. We'll do the full-fledged handicapping session on Friday.
That sounds great.
All right.
I'm looking forward to it. We got 15 races for you on Sunday. I hope you're sticking around for that.
I'm flying to California.
Ouch. Okay. All right.
15 races. You really have to get 15 races. It's very important.
And then a second line at the end. Okay. We've got the Chantel Lannery Memorial Foundation second line, which is always, you know, the second year. It was very special last year. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, Kevin Kilroy, trust your luck, everybody. What time you guys go on?
12:45 first post, but Dooley's show starts off 11:45, so got to tune in for that.
How did that Dooley horse, the Dooley named horse?
Dougaroo didn't get out of the gates very well, but Foley likes him. You know, I think they're stretching him out. He's running this week. He's going to run better for sure. And I think Mitch is still on him. He's going to maybe just, you know, get him out of the gates, get him into the race.
Well, and of course, I should really try to get. I'll reach out to John. I should get him tomorrow or Friday, and we can also start to look ahead to Indianapolis as well. Horseshoe.
Yeah, they've been doing great up there.
Well, and they've got the NHC champion.
Oh, is that his stomping grounds?
You bet. Qualified at Indy and.
Yeah.
From Indy, he's got a produce business, Mike Gillum.
Yeah, you guys did great coverage of that. I was watching on the website. Yeah, that was cool to see.
A lot of fun. Fun to be here. I appreciate it, KK. Let me get Seth Merrow in here. And Seth has you on, right? Seth, you've been on with Seth?
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Good guy, yeah.
He's the greatest. And I'm sure he's listening because what else has he got to do? He's waiting for TV. He's waiting for his TV to start. Thanks, KK.
Thank you, Steve.
Great start, and we'll talk to Kevin and to Caitlin. We'll get Caitlin tomorrow. We'll do her preview of the Ruby, and then get the full bore. That card's good. That card is equally good. All right, let me get Seth so we can see what's going on back home. Seth Merrow, and I know because he tweeted about it. I know that Seth watched every minute of coverage and listened to the coverage and wished he was there, and I wish you were there too.
I'm completely envious, and yeah, you said, you knew I was listening this morning. Of course I was listening, but I was also listening from the studio. I was in the TV studio Friday, Saturday, and early Sunday, listening to the coverage on your website, and then I popped over, and it was, I don't know who they got to do the TV, but the TV coverage was very nice. Whoever they had doing it was making the right choices of going to you guys, going to races, going to the leaderboard and whatnot. It was a nice one, almost a couple hours of TV. And at one point you gave out, I was kind of astonished, but it made sense. You gave out the number of hours you were on the, so like 20 something you were on the, it's crazy.
Yeah, well, it's typically, that's pretty typical. Although it's gotten a little shorter on, it was shorter on Sunday than usual, but it was longer on Friday. Friday, I was shocked at the end of the, we were, I think 6.5 hours on Friday. And that's probably what kind of got to me. I'm a little punchy, to be honest.
No, I don't blame you. I mean, God bless you. I do my little stint, and so I can completely relate, and I'll tell people out there who just listen to many hours and doing what you guys did. Again, it was great. It's always great. That's a lot of fun. You bring the people over who play and pick their brains a little bit, and industry people and whatnot. It's really fun to listen to every year, and you guys did it again. And then you get to Sunday, and it turns out to be just phenomenal. I was checking also. I know you had Jesse Temple, our local Capital OTB guy.
I did. Retired state trooper.
Yeah, that was fun to listen to him. I met him a couple of weeks ago right in the clubhouse race book down in Albany. And I was checking because the NTRA does a great job. They put up a list on their website at the beginning so you can find people and where they're from. And there was a handful of people from around here. There was somebody from Malta. There was somebody from Saratoga. Jesse was from Albany. There was a guy from Amsterdam. And I was kind of checking all weekend long, and the locals just, it was not their weekend. They weren't really making a lot of noise, but the one thing I wish they would do, and if they do it, somebody can alert me because I haven't found it. I would love to see the winners, the layout of the bets he played, if not the whole thing, certainly the last day. I would love to see, you know, coming up from 64 to win the whole thing.
They're up.
I would love to see how he played it.
They're posted.
Okay.
If you go to NTRA.com, there's about 7 links. And I think right in the middle, there's like 2 bars of 3, and then in between or at the top in the middle, there it says, all 2024 NHC plays. So you can,
oh, okay.
You
can, the last time I was there, I haven't checked in a day or yeah. So, but I'll go because I'd love to see how he played that. That was just a lot of fun. And like I say, the TV guys, that last hour and a half or so, did very well. Your set was very nice, and they just had a little edge where you could see beyond your set, and that was good. It gave an idea of activity in the room, and it was a lot of fun. So again, congratulations to you and Hammer and Rich Hang as
well. Yeah. Well, and you know, G.D. Hieronymus, the famed producer from Keeneland, who does so many, you know, industry, kind of the institutional productions and legacy productions. I mean, he's there's him and there's everybody else. I mean, he's the go-to. Say the least.
Yeah, it was a nice job on that. And yeah, Tom Rooney on it. He said, "Love to figure out a way to get TV." And he, I'm sure he was talking somehow. You know, get this on a mainstream. And I think there's probably a way to do that. Certainly the final table. But as he's saying that, I'm thinking, particularly after I saw the TV side, they could just do that for the 3 days, but, you know, focus on you guys. And I think it would be a nice little production that could certainly, you know, go online at least. Now, I don't know if you guys would be thrilled about that. And maybe there's a cost factor as well. But I thought the TV portion was done very well. And to add that into what you guys did in the previous 2 days would be nice, certainly, because well, you guys did a bang up job.
We did three. The TV was 3 hours and 15 minutes, and one thing that NTRA decided was to sort of shift the everything sort of forward about an hour, and that worked out well. That was a good plan. It came off. In fact, Hammer, we were at dinner, and Hammer, we're just sort of reflecting, and I'm sure he'll talk about it Friday. That was his first one, and he said he was so impressed with, you know, the way in which the whole thing was executed. It gets better and better, and the venue.
And it was fun to hear him too, because I was the same when we went out and did the 2 years we covered it for television. I was the same way. You get there, and you know, Paul Matisse and Duke were saying the same thing. It's just so much fun to be there. It's great. It's like a room full of hundreds of horse players, and everybody's, you know, they're all there to win, but they're very cordial, and it's a lot of fun, and like-minded people, and it was fun to hear Hammer kind of get there. Hey, first time here, but and then at one point he said, "I want to come back and I want to be at that table there." That's my goal as well. I don't play as many tournaments as I would like to, but I would certainly like to be there as a player myself.
Well, you've come close. It's not like you haven't posted some moments and made some runs, so it can happen. That would be the greatest if.
That would be fun. Yeah. No. Last year, there was a tournament probably the week before Vegas. It had to be one of the last ones, and I missed by like $1.20. It was like, and a guy hit a place horse that knocked me out. Like, oh, come on.
I love it. Well, let me. We got about.
The media. I was doing all right in the media charity event on Saturday. I was sitting third with like four races to go, and you might remember this. I had Juan Valdez, the shug horse who comes up the rail at 5-1, and just gets nipped at the wire. Otherwise, that would have been another, you know, $12 there. And I wound up, I think, 11th. But with the shug horse, I would have been somewhere, you know, obviously in better contention. But I had, that was fun too. That was fun.
Well, and congratulations to Jamie Hayden from Grayson. Jockey Club Research Foundation. Jamie was the media contest winner, and shockingly, his donation goes to the Jockey Club Research Foundation.
When I saw where he was from, I was just waiting for the press release to come out, and I'm like, I think I can predict this.
Yeah, we know where this is going. It's pretty funny. You only got 3 minutes, not even 2.5. You got just numbers or what's your best bet?
Yeah, I'll blow through. I'll just give like a quick top picks. It's a little more expensive. Last week, I didn't hit the pick four, but the last race we had the $22 winner on top, and our other three combined underneath for the super. So people were playing along. I'm a little more expensive. Three by three by four by three. So I'm 6-9-1 here. I originally was 6-8. The eight scratched a 5,000 claimer. I'm not going to rely on one horse, but I do think Mr. Tito's the six on the drop is probably the one to beat. So in that opening leg, I'm 6-9-1. In the second leg, I'm 9-7-10-5, but I'll use the 9-7-10. Nalita. Three starts so far, so lightly raced, but there are a couple, and has only been on the synthetic over at Gulfstream, tries the turf today, and there were a couple of siblings, Stormy Nelly, had three wins on the turf, another sibling called Spicy Nelly was also a turf winner, so I think the surface switch and the venue change will be big for Nalita, so I'll use that one on top, 9-7-10 in the second leg, race number seven. In the eighth race, I have an 8-1-7-4. But again, this race, I'm going to use all four of them, actually. I'm going to put the eight on top, 46 counts, two first-time starters on top. There's a sibling for the number eight called Fru Fru that won its career debut, also went on to win the Sam Davis a couple of years, but 4 or 5 years back. Another one called Fru Fru Zan that was second in debut, won the second start. Co-Zan is a sire I like very much for win early type. So I'll use 46 counts on top. Duncan Run, another firster I think could be interesting, and then a couple with some experience. So I'll use all four of mine, 8-1-7-4 in the eighth. And in the ninth race, I have a 2-9-4-10. 2-9-4-10. I'll use the 2-9 and the 4. Gilded Age on top. Again, coming over from Gulfstream. Trainers having a very good meet. Just missed last time. I think this one's going to fit nicely with this bunch. So in the last leg, again, I'll go 2-9-4.
So 3 by 3 by 4 by 3. 1-6-9. With 7-9-10, with 1-4-7-8, with 2-4-9, there you go. Well done. 108, so $54 on the pick four play at Tampa. Seth Merrow, everybody. Seth Merrow 2 on your Twitter, but number one in your heart.
And good luck to everybody today.
Absolutely. I will talk to you next week from Santa Anita.
Sounds good. Travel safe. Continue the safe travels.
I appreciate it. We can almost see the finish line.
and reset that clock on the
time zone. That was not like me.
It's not like you.
Nope. Nope. Made me laugh, though, at the same time. Seth Merrow, everybody, and there you go. Back tomorrow here at Fairgrounds, and we'll start to get serious about this rest of this card and all the card and Turfway as well. And of course they'll be drawing Santa Anita and Aqueduct, etc. All right. Thanks to Seth. Thanks to Kevin Kilroy and Sid, of course. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. Dave Hill. Speaking of hills, Hill & Dale and Dave Hill. And tough discussion to have with Bill Nader, TOC. I wish everybody the best. Don't know. We'll know more. We'll know more by tomorrow, late tomorrow afternoon, after the CHRP meeting. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. Archive podcast, etc. And I will talk to you in the morning from beautiful Fairgrounds, Louisiana Derby Day. Right ahead.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
PA Bred, I think we've built a brand at this point.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear. Carabelle in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The best Breeders' Awards and Stallion Awards in the country.
We're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky. Please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start?
Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Scholarships are available. Visit rtip.arizona.edu.